Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341-790-266-4862. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout, or technical operator producer. I'm Dennis Johnson. I'm your host. And we go until 2 this afternoon with our usual breaks for the regional roundup, tracking the latest network news from Flow, and the latest from Starcom Network News. Those are the breaks. And I look forward to having discussions with you on things that are on your mind. Whatever's on your mind, let's have a chat about it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. Oh, and just one short burst loss of power, and hopefully we're back on track. Seems that happens every time I sit here. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello.
Yes,
hi,
sir.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning, right off the bat. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Are they waiting to see if they can give me a run-up to the wicket?
No, I shortened the run-up because the lights went out. I wasn't sure what was going to happen.
Oh, I see.
I keep getting these bursts of darkness. I don't know who's arranging it, but... Yeah.
We passed that stage where the run-up is concerned, man. That's taking me back to 2007, the World Cup. Where Australia and somebody else had to play cricket the last over in darkness.
In the dark. Yes, yeah, but we won anyway. So, what's up?
We passed everything.
We went back.
Dennis,
mm-hmm.
Look, I know that when I done this conversation, right?
Mm-hmm. We going to be rowing?
Pardon me?
There'll be a row?
Not really a row.
Okay.
There would be at least one particular guy that, believe I don't know who he is, but these days in modern technology, you know, everybody business, right?
So they tell me.
Call me and tell me a lot of things. I don't mind you hitting me on the phone, on the program,
mm-hmm.
but when you're calling at my home,
yeah,
telling me all sorts of things,
yeah,
I just pick a few chosen words to tell you, and it don't be easy. Words that I can't use on the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that this guy remembers the last chosen word that I give him. Anyhow, let me get straight to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I support whoever I support, that don't signify, or that don't. I never did a guy that was afraid to speak my mind. I might hold back some things, but I want to speak my mind. Is something that about to happen in this country in a few weeks. It was told, I was made aware of that on this very great station. And I'm saying here again one more time, the Minister of Public Works and his lieutenant, and I'm talking about Dr. Duguid,
mm-hmm.
and Peter Phillips. Mm-hmm. Both of them fail again. And I would say this day, the field before the start this particular one. Do you know that junction there at the beginning or the ending, or however you feel to call it, a St. Silas that take you, jump across the Rolling Mount Highway and go down through to Westmoreland?
Yes, sir, I know it very well.
You know it very well, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that that's been problematic for a number of years as well, right?
Correct.
And you also know, or you believe that something that urgently need to be done with that particular junction many moons ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
What with getting the minister head, or the two ministers head, or the technical people at Public Works that advise the minister anyhow to put traffic lights there?
So, I don't know. I saw that there were tape, the tickers put down that usually track the flow of traffic in that area, so I guess they were trying to figure out
the traffic
to see how much, you know, the how many cars go by and trucks and what and that kind of thing. I've heard a caller to this program on more than one occasion talk about that junction and what should be done. That's one of the widest sections of that road. That's the first thing. Any crossing there, gotta look for at least 6 or 8 different streams of traffic, because you got the middle lane that's turned left and the middle lane that's turned right. That junction is a very difficult place to manage. And if they think that traffic lights gonna be the management tool required, I don't know, perhaps they got expert advice who measure distance, time walking, how long to time the traffic lights. I don't know.
Give me a run from this window then.
Tell me why you don't like the traffic lights.
I don't like the traffic lights because I think that the traffic lights is a step backward.
Mm-hmm.
Way backward.
All right.
Look, just a few, probably a mile or just over a mile up the road,
mm-hmm.
at the junction of that take you up to Orange Hill, where the huge effect.
Correct.
There, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put a roundabout there. Working
mm-hmm.
beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah, but how much pedestrian traffic?
Pardon me?
How much pedestrian traffic? I think that's what they're worried about. The people crossing
traffic?
The road. Pedestrians, yeah. People
traffic?
Walking, yeah.
Something, buddy.
I never seen plenty of people walking across the area, but I don't travel there a lot.
No. You ask a very important question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting, I'm just asking you a question, mm-hmm. that the reason for these traffic lights is mm-hmm. because you got villagers live on both sides of the road?
I figure that's the reason, the pedestrian traffic.
No,
that's what I think it is.
We got same car pedestrian crossing, though.
I know that, and people don't use it. You know that, too.
Listen to me.
Uh-huh.
But the reason, I'm all for the roundabout, right?
Right.
And I think that there is the place, if there's one place that need a traffic light, that need a roundabout. Is there? Yes. Because the truth is, I travel up there up to this morning. I take to work my brother. He work at Royal Westmoreland.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And on certain occasions, I take you to work on this morning. Like, for instance, when the rain was really falling heavy, I take my brother to work.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. You pull a wisdom teeth to get out of that junction, coming back to lift you back
that.
To the highway to go back up by the same roundabout there by Chaffet.
I know.
You
that.
Understand? I coming back to St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say something to you, man. I don't really see a lot of pedestrian traffic. And if so, they got something called pedestrian crosswalk, right?
Yes.
But this is the danger now. This is the danger. And Dennis, you know this better than I. You can speak to this ad nauseum. When you leave home at 4 o'clock in the morning to open VOB Studios, right, whenever you leave home, right?
Mm-hmm.
You will see you, Dennis Johnson, you mentioned it on more than 50 times on this radio, that when you come to a traffic light,
mm-hmm.
you see the pedestrian walk across.
Sign on. Sign.
Beam
mm-hmm.
flashing in front of you
mm-hmm.
and telling you don't think of pedestrians crossing.
Mm-hmm.
You know the reason for that? It is a danger in that. I sit there by Cushman Hill all the time.
Somebody is pressing and waiting on you to
what
stop?
What the people do, mm-hmm. what the people with criminal intent.
In intent, yeah. They press it and stop.
Mm-hmm. Press the thing,
mm-hmm.
wait till you come to a stall,
and come at you.
Mm-hmm. And then ambush you.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy, the same thing I believe would happen down there. I am saying to the ministry, I'm saying to Dr. Duguid, I am saying to Peter Phillips, and I'm saying to the ministry, technical people in the ministry, traffic lights at that junction is not the solution. As a matter of fact, it can confuse the motoring traffic, the motoring
public,
because too much traffic flow on that road on morning in both directions, buddy.
I know there's a lot of traffic there, and that's why I said that particular junction, although it's just four crossroads, you actually have about six or seven streams of traffic.
Yes.
Because and that's why crossing there to me was always the wrong place to cross. I know it's easy for people on both sides, you know, the bus stop not far away. But it's the widest part, one of the widest parts of the Ronald Mile Highway. It's one of the widest pieces.
And that's why
you feel you could put a roundabout there.
Carry a roundabout easy.
That's why you feel you could put a roundabout there. The challenge, though, will be, sir, and the
infrastructure is there already.
Yeah, but the challenge will
much,
be...
Ain't got much moving in that body.
The challenge will be crossing in that pedestrian crossing on a roundabout. You know the challenges we have with pedestrian crossings and roundabouts. I take your point on the danger, especially at night. Maybe they will find a way around that. Perhaps we'll stop having people of ill intent pressing things and getting it to stop. But I know people who break red lights after a certain time because they figure they ain't got traffic on the road they're going through nevertheless. There'll be people who try to cross and the lights change and it. I leave the engineers to work out that one.
Another madness there, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
On Hinesville.
Yeah, I know that one too.
Perfect place for a roundabout. You understand? Because you travel there, they're the most confused traffic lights I've ever seen in my life.
Man, they're working though.
They were working what?
They're working.
I used to play dominoes. Because we don't do it no more. I used to play dominoes in Leicester, and then we went down by the Good Shepherd Church, right? Mm. And so I would traverse that place there, that traffic light there.
Regularly.
Every Saturday morning, very early, very
mm-hmm.
early.
Mm-hmm.
Same damn thing happened. Pedestrian crossing, light flashing in the front of the
nobody there.
At all. And sometimes the light changed three times on the other side.
Before
they give you the direction to go. Not a mad place there. They need a roundabout, right? And I ain't gonna let up on this one.
Well,
I think the ministry lose focus when they plan to put traffic lights down there after Silas and Royal Westmoreland.
The engineers must have a formula that says, depending on the flow of traffic, what kind of traffic you get.
These are the same engineers that put that foolishness there outside the Simpson Waters and the gas station. The all about.
I'm not sure that that's who
that's
did it, but
all
okay.
About. That's not a roundabout. That's all about.
That is a particularly...
To get down in Williams Industry, you got to crisscross three lines of traffic.
To get
you
there,
understand?
Sir,
that is a roundabout that they may get right, for sure.
Sir, not only that one. I think the entire Warrens area needs a serious relook. The multiplicity of roundabouts and changes and exits and entrances just don't make sense.
I'm saying all of that, Dennis. My last and final thing, and I out.
Mm-hmm.
You said the lollipop?
Man, leave the lollipop.
No, the lollipop, perfect.
Yes.
I love the lollipop.
Lollipop works.
It works.
Yeah, I know it does.
Nice.
I know
you understand? Lollipop works nice. But the foolishness, the all about, don't they? Nah.
Be good. Take care. And look out for the traffic lights when they put them in, okay? Don't drive on memory. Brass Tax, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, sir.
I was hoping.
The what?
I didn't hear the timetable of who going to be on today.
Thursday is mine until.
I was hoping that you was going to be on.
Thursday is mine until.
And then I heard your voice. I said, thank God.
Why?
Now, Dennis, I want to deal with this boss program, but before I deal with the boss program, I want to refer back to something that you and I spoke or debated. You could recall I said what COVID did to the country, and I can remind you. I said COVID shot up production. COVID caused what we would call the behavior of the minibuses. Mm-hmm. Come to a closure, that bad behavior. And I said, then the supermarkets realize they get so much production within that short period of time that serving customers, then it is finished, it can show that they could work with less staff. I don't know if you remember that conversation.
Yeah, I remember it.
And the other one now is the behavior of the minibuses that used to having the buses packed with people, the COVID introduced where they had to scatter them. Well, I don't know how they're doing it now, because I've been driving a bus now for years. Anyhow, let me get to my substantial point. The other one, I forgot. The one that I told you, you remember when I spoke about the CC there, and I said, I believe that this COVID, and they explain, if a man gets sent home, what about the 13 weeks severance?
Right.
And they said they believe that the government should suspend the labor laws.
Should change it for
You can remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Good. All right. Let me look at boss. Now, I heard you mention something, and I said, how the hell is he able to think this way? That is when you said there's nothing wrong, but the pain, when the time comes, how about paying the interest and where it's going to come from? I remember you mentioned that, you know. But it forced me to look at boss in a more serious manner. Now, I want the public to understand that the government is an employer. You know, a lot of people don't recognize that.
What, that the government is an employer?
The government is there to take up people. They don't realize that the public, the government has a right to serve the workers just like the private sector will serve their employers. When we look at boss, and I read an article here on March 15, 2007, Arthur said no more borrowing because the country was highly in debt and he has no intention to carry the country back into debt and he would not be able to borrow money from 2007 to 2012. So 2007 to 2012 will be 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Good. Now, he also went on to say, you can look it up on the computer, he also went on to say that the government at the time, this is 2007, the domestic debt was projected to grow by 10%. Now, if I tell you that your debt is going to grow, what do you expect? Huh? But he said what he would maintain is to honor his debts and his loan payments. Now, I finish with that. Now, let me give you a little idea of what used to happen on plantations. Now, during the period of crop season, because you know there we come off the plantation system. During the time of the sugar crop, you would find workers by one or two pigs to slaughter when you're entering into the high season. You would have got a few extra dollars. Management of the plantation, I mean, the managing plantation, would also have two or three pigs to slaughter to. What the manager would do is when he slaughtered his pigs in the crop, he would advise his overseers is to take the money from the workers' pay every week. Now, the average worker know that.
So that radio playing in the background is really affecting our broadcast, all right? I let it run for a while, but it's kind of running into.
Yeah. I was in one room and I just came out, you see?
No problem.
Yeah. I don't know if you follow what I'm saying over the slaughter of the pigs.
The pigs, yes, I always follow.
Yeah, the worker now will slaughter pig. But you know, he cannot deduct any money from the worker pay. He partner pay. He has to wait until whenever he is being paid. John, then it's sometimes crop season start and finish the next year, and then workers can't get the money pick up. But you see the secret in there that the manager is able to pick up his money. When I said that I deal with the boss program, all the lot of talk, all the legislations, it means one thing.
Which is?
That the government is borrowing money from its employees. The average idea that put out there that the other financial institutions like Clico and them will tell you, well, don't put your money in the bank, we will give you a higher percentage. But what I am concerned about, you are borrowing your workers' money. You are borrowing your employees' money. When right. You tell them you're going to get a 5% interest.
And the sliding scale apparently goes higher than 5%.
But it goes higher than 5% according to how you could pay.
Correct.
Now, what I am concerned about, with the debt that this country in at present, that this debt is going to get mature at some time. And I believe the maturity of these bonds is going to be eclipsing at the same time. I am only concerned don't get me wrong, it is one of the first moves that I believe with an independent country is to service your own debt. So when we, as not me, because I finished work, when the workers pay for itself, just like how you went up at the sewer system when you was running into problems, you ask the whole country to finance the system, to bring in trucks, to clean up the environment, and you introduce the tax on the water bill. I have no quarrel with the BOSS program, because instead of borrowing from outside, you're borrowing from inside. Your own.
Mm-hmm.
All I am concerned about, mm-hmm. do not come to the public and make them believe that you're doing that good for them. It is like a man come at your
but
house.
But listen, hold on. As with everything else, let me ask you this question. You're a businessman, right? You run a business.
Yeah.
Are you going to come to me and say to me, Dennis, I could drop you to work every morning. I need money to put gas in my car. Is that what you're going to tell me? No. You're going to come to me. Mark, I don't know why you're laughing. You're a businessman. You're come to me and tell me, Dennis, I see you getting up 4 o'clock in the morning, going out and hoping the bus passing early to get you to Starcom for 5. I park up right down the road here, so by you. Man, you know, I could get you to work, you know, because I going downtown myself. I can give you a discount price. Because if you take me 7 days a week or 6 days a week, because I notice you work 6 days a week. If you give me 6 days a week, I can charge you $5 a day rather than charging you, you know, $25 per trip. And the bus costs you $350. You only, you know, and you ain't gonna come. You ain't gonna come and tell me I want gas to put in my car. Man, it's called sales, sir.
Let me finish on this, that I could conclude and listen. I like listening. Now, let me say this.
Uh-huh.
I am a bit concerned. When we are told mm-hmm. that it is an initiative mm-hmm. from the government, I can tell you why I'm concerned. The same way you introduced the program to the waste, you could do the same thing and get the same money.
Sir, it's not about the money. How many times do I have to say that?
But that's what you're telling you. That's what I'm getting at. That is what I'm getting at, that, Dennis. You
tell
are
me,
on
tell
the
me,
right
tell
track.
Me, tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me.
I'm trying to explain why I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So what I am saying,
mm-hmm.
that all this is saying, I am going according to the dictates to reduce the wage bill of government.
Correct. And what else? And how else would you do it?
That is the reason for deducting. That is why you have not gone out into the private sector. Because you've gone into the private sector, you would not reap what you intend reaping. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
that is where you find it. That is where the government find it possible to explain to the public. And they had to go to where the original idea came from. The IMF, it's with Kelvin Greenwich. You have so much economists, and they could not explain to the public what they want the money for. But Kelvin Greenwich was capable enough as an IMF person and understand the transition of what is happening that he was able to put it out there. If you are sure about what you are doing and not depending on the dictates of the IMF, you have Clive.
Sir, I don't know where you get that from, but hold on to it. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
Morning, Dennis.
Hi, morning, Glenn.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I want to talk this morning a bit of something I mentioned to you before. About statutory corporations, SOEs,
mm-hmm.
state-owned enterprises now, they're called. We grew up hearing about statutory boards and statutory corporations and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new terminology. But I want to first though start off by the statutory boards, few of them have been in the news. And recently, those they have been in the news for the wrong reasons, like with the BWA and the Auditor General's report, et cetera. And then there was this notice in the paper, BADMC and Minister Weir and whatnot. But I want to therefore take this opportunity to commend the National Insurance Board for for the magnificent work it has done in providing benefits to persons at a time when most needed. And I don't know if you want to join, but the Prime Minister made a comment about the House on Tuesday. But for a board to be able to reduce a backlog of benefits from 25,000 plus to 2,000 while doing other things is a commendable step. And then not only that, but they have been delivering on the COVID receipts of money. People have also been receiving. I am told now that persons, the unemployed persons, have already begun to receive their checks. Sorry, the self-employed persons have already begun to receive their checks. And I therefore want to commend Ingrid Nagel and his board, and of course the management staff, for rising to the occasion so that the trials and tribulations, the severity of the COVID, was not extended to people's daily life because they weren't getting the benefits on time or getting them late, et cetera, et cetera.
I join you in that. I remember seeing that I've passed and seeing vehicles there on a weekend that looks like a regular working day. And I was told that, yes, the team actually works through the weekends to try and clear the backlog. So I join you in commending them on the work they've done. There's still people who call to complain that they haven't gotten theirs yet, while some people got twice and phones not being answered. But I know that they've been doing, well, they've been working around the clock, let me put it that way, to try to clear up some of the issues.
I'm told also that they are putting emphasis on giving a better service in the customer service department. I understand that has to be revamped and refashioned. So they're more positive and early response to people's phone calls and messages, et cetera. That I understand is very much in the works. But not only has been Chairman Ingrid Nagel delivered, he's also has been delivering. He's been keeping his promise. He promised that he had promised there would be improvements. And we have been steadily seeing the improvements. And I think he and the board and the staff are to be commended for. I suspect what's happening that Ingrid Nagel, who is a part of the corporate world in Barbados,
he's bringing some corporate ethics to work, practices
and getting more out of the, having been involved in the system, getting more out of the system than if you left it the laissez-faire civil service practice. Which seems to
Says a man who was in charge of the civil service, Glenn?
But you have to deal with what you have.
You've defended the public service in Barbados.
Yeah, because the public service is still keeping Barbados together.
Okay.
It's the public service has largely led the development. It's the public service plus the politicians who've led the development of Barbados.
You just call them laissez-faire. That's why I pulled at it.
Not the private sector, you know.
Look, Glenn, let me say it to you. I believe that given the development, the way the Caribbean development goes, a lot of the private sector work depends on government agencies delivering certain things at certain times. For their projects, they want rushed approval, go to ministers and try to bypass the standards set to make sure that they stay in line and do the correct thing. And that has been the practice in several Caribbean islands that I've had the privilege of spending time in. So it's not a Barbados thing. So I agree with you that an efficient public service does in fact help the delivery of services and improves the status of the country in the eyes of the international world.
As a matter of fact, I would say that the big ideas for Barbados development have come from both the political sector and the public sector. Especially in the last few years, I don't see the equivalent of a Keira Hunt, so John Stanley Gullard. There's not that depth and intellectual fervor, and there's not the big ideas of the private sector. The private sector, as COVID has seen, has become as dependent on the public purse as anybody. Corporate welfare in Barbados, what used to be called corporate welfare, is now at its height because of the circumstances. In other words, the pockets were not as deep and well-funded as we thought they were. That is a reality which we are now working to get back out. By commending Chairman Edgel and his, I want to say that they still have work to do where the seventh permanent tribunals are concerned. I know they finance it. Tony Morris saying they paid their 1,765 cases left still to be decided.
So I'm going back to 2012.
But you know, at the back of each case are families, people, their lives. When you're severed, you've lost your job. What are some of those people's lives in that 10, 12 years? That requires a task force that is going to dig into that. And I hope that Chairman Gnezza can do something to help bring that about in quick order. People have died and haven't gone to severance decision. Like, so I think that needs to be corrected as soon as possible.
Let me ask you this. Again, going from your experience, because you've been a member of the apparatus for some years.
I was also an employee of government, also statutory corporation.
Let me see if I could phrase this correctly so I get the information that I want. Tribunals in the past, you've had retired magistrates, people with legal and HR experience for everything from town planning to NIS to taxes. Those tribunals met, judgments were written. How much has changed over the years to get this state? Is it that there are more lawyers representing the people involved? Is it that there are more cases and less either space? Because I know the remuneration wasn't that great. It wasn't that, you paid members of the tribunal $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000. I know they were small amounts. I know that because my uncle was a part of several of them. But my question is, what has changed that it has gotten to this stage?
I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Try to hit it there and not my fingers.
My information is that the part of the problem is the question of the lawyers on the board,
who not right? available.
They get paid a little money at the tribunal, mm-hmm. so it's worth their while better go to court.
Mm-hmm. I follow you.
Go to court to pay for the testosterone.
To get costs. To get costs?
No, it works. It pays them better if they stay in court, go to mm-hmm. high court, etc.
Rather than go to the tribunal?
Yeah, to the tribunal. So you get delays, they adjourn, you can't come there.
Glenn, my problem is this is the same reason why we say our judicial system is in a mess.
Well, change the composition of the board. You probably don't need as many lawyers. But you need a certain experience, because the law is there written already. They're not inventing any new law. They're just applying... Just applying the law and the decisions that are there, one thing requires, which can be done easily with the right person in for it. I want to move on quickly to another point. Uh-huh. At least we are hearing about NIS, we hear from Ian Gnezza also about the transport, but you know there's some statutory boards you don't hear from at all? I think we have, some 53 also SOEs?
About 60, I think there was.
Well, 53, okay. Right, 53 or 60.
Somewhere.
You know, remember all the time there was time when the BADMC was a dynamic institution. We had the BMC, and you had Mr. Richard, and they were holding press conference. They'd be talking to the press. And we have 50-something bodies of various compositions operating on the public purse. They have to be financed, serviced by the public purse. Mm-hmm. But we get little or no information. Like, for example, what's happening at BADC? What's happening at the Rural Development Commission? What's up with UDC? Who are the chairmen? Who's leader? What is their vision? What is their mission? What are their plans? You hear nothing about this in the last 2 years, virtually. And so we are left in limbo. Meanwhile, they're functioning. They think they're functioning. Is it that they don't have many resources to do much? Come and tell the public, or have them operate in as virtually anonymous bodies.
To merge them, discontinue some of them? The, for example, the one that I think perhaps will be most, the two that perhaps will be most instrumental to our years ahead, the BTII restructured, the Barbados Tourism Authority,
BTMI,
one, and of course agriculture, since we want to start growing our own food, that would be important too. So I can't see us getting rid of those. The BIDC, if we can have any thrust into any kind of industry, perhaps they still have a role. But
If you have 50 something, 60 of them, and by the way, the Auditor General say only 16 or 17 of them have up-to-date financials, so we don't know what the financials with the rest are like. But we're supposed to be getting rid of them, or merging them, consolidating them, under IMF direction, by the way.
Until then, they should be made to perform a report to the public. You don't hear from the chairman. You don't hear the ministers speak at any length on them. So what are they doing? I know boards can be tricky stuff because you have to manage them very tightly because on their board seat, even though they're appointed by the minister, something seems to take on a life of their own.
And run the minister into trouble.
Right, okay. So for example, it was found at Walton that people were having meetings, several meetings a month. Mm-hmm. Some of the subcommittees getting hold and people getting paid to the subcommittee. All that expenditure coming out of the government to finance. And then a policy was put in place. I'm not sure if it's still in place. In my time, there's a policy put in place where you had one meeting, you were limited to one meeting a month, except specially authorized by the minister, in order to control
the runaway meeting to pay people.
Expenses and whatnot. Because there are people on the board who think they're doing, they might be think they're doing their government or the party or minister of favor, seek to award things and be part of things that should not happen. But most of the boards of honor have. Are supposed to have a representative of the ministry involved on the board. The PS or somebody should be there who's senior. Mm-hmm. And who should be able to guide if they see things happening, go out, put them in line, and report to the minister, speak to the chairman, make sure it happens correctly before it becomes a festering sore and a scandal and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it needs continuous management of the process. Read the minutes. When you're a minister, you get minutes of boards. You read the minutes, and you can pick up things and troublesome things before they become major scandals and issues and crises and whatnot. But if you don't read the minutes, if the people are reporting, you are not aware of what's happening at the board level. If you are representative on the board is not reporting to you properly and fully. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying let us get some meetings and hear some interviews with the BADC, with the RDC, UDC, and all the other ones, BA, DMC. Although that seems to be waiting for the next chapter in the saga between Minister Weir and Foreign Minister Wood. But that is another story. I'm saying that these persons have a responsibility to account to the public for what they're doing, the services they're providing.
Do they have that, or do they supposed to report to the minister who would then, I guess, speak under him? Because in a lot of cases, Glenn, I'm not saying in all, but in a lot of cases, when you reach out to various functionaries, board chairman, etc., they usually say, well, I have to check with the minister before I issue this, or I have to check with the minister. There are some who respond to questions. There are others who hide behind, let the minister say something about it, or I report to the minister.
I agree.
I can't remember anybody from the BIDC speaking on any public forum, certainly while I've been sitting in this chair or the other one that John in, on any matter. And I see this.
Sometimes it revolves around the personality and the policy of the minister.
Possibly.
Or it might be just the capability of the board chairman. Because if you appoint a person to chair a board to represent you, your interests, your policy, that person should have certain competencies.
Agreed.
And you should not elect them.
Agreed.
So I'm saying, I'm not sure. I mean, like BWA, you hear from BWA.
The chairman has spoken on the minister, too?
But not in recent times. There's been a dearth of information coming out.
But what information do you want from them?
Come and report. Tell us how things are happening.
What?
Not just when you can't get water, but come and give periodic reports to your programs. And that is where you buy into the public support because they know what's happening.
But isn't that where you have a PR arm?
Whatever. Get information out to the public, and that way the public know what's happening. They can relate to it. But if you only hear them or see from the when there's a crisis, it's a different, you know, then it's a form of communication.
But I agree. Listen, I am not disagreeing with you for the need for communication, you. I'm just trying to figure out how you do the communicating. Because, look, I can tell you, for example, that let's take the National Cultural Foundation as an example. I'll use the NCF as an example. Morning, Carol. How are you? The NCF over the years have had a public relations arm that has worked. And when the chairman needed to speak, the chairman would be part of the discussion. When the CEO had to speak, the CEO would be a part of the discussion. But regular releases would be done via the public relations arm. So if you have a functioning entity
bureaucracy.
Yeah, if you have a status quo that works for you.
System, right.
Correct. Then right. You would know, for example, okay, if we got to talk about the finances of the SOE, this would have to come from the chairman, the financial person, right. Even if it's arranged by the PR company right. Or the PR person. If it's a minor matter that can be handled at a lower thing, they could read a release or whatever. But you have to have something that works.
A system.
Something that works, yeah.
It will not happen by itself. It has to be made. Correct. You have to manage it. Right.
Which is why I picked on the foundation, because I've worked with them through the years, dealing with fireworks and other things. But
yeah.
Glenn, I don't disagree with you. If you look at the emoluments of government, you would see that almost every single department has, including the state-owned corporations, there's a structure in place from chairman right down to weekly paid workers.
You know,
the guy who cut the grass. So there must be some manner of reporting that makes sense. Let me ask you this as my final question to you, since
sure.
you talked about the BWA. When last we had a report from the Ombudsman? Okay. All right. Don't answer, Glenn. Don't answer, Glenn. Don't answer, Glenn. But it's provided for in the estimates of Barbados on an annual basis that we have an Ombudsman, its staff, Office of Public Counsel, it's staffed, and I don't recall the last time I have heard a public report from the Office of the Ombudsman. Nobody could tell me what has been done. I would say in the last, I'd push it to about 7-10 years, even more. Thanks for your comments. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Hi, good morning, Dennis.
Hey, it is.
Yes. All right. So I would like to talk about two things.
Mm-hmm.
And indirectly, it is race-related. And we know that's a very touchy subject, but I can proceed nonetheless, right?
No problem.
The first one, it happened a while ago under the last administration when there was, I think it was, I'm not sure if it's a law or what, but what happened was, with regard to the importation of old cars, we call them antique cars, the government placed no duty on them, all right? And I found that rather strange because there are not many people in Barbados that would want to buy antique cars. You know, it's normally something that the rich people do, right? Most Bajans would want a car to get from point A to point B. Yeah, but yet this happened whereby a law was passed allowing for antique cars once it's over 30 years old that you pay no duties on. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had called in about it when it first was passed, and it was met with like, well, you know, it's for tourism and that sort of thing.
Which that's I what it like. Was.
That was what was said. At that time on the calling program, which mm-hmm. I kind of like scoffed at because to me it was pretty clear that this was something that was done to appease a certain class or race of people.
But why
right?
would you say so?
Well, then the last time, many years ago, when we went to these antique car shows,
mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 people who owned these vintage cars were mm-hmm. white people.
Okay.
Now, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but
I don't know. The last time I went, I saw. There's a guy that I know who has a Ford Cortina from 1960-something, and I think he about my complexion.
Yeah,
I'm not the right origin. No, but
they,
oh,
yeah,
I know.
Guy.
You talk about
exactly
the one thing.
Exactly
my
point.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah? No, here's the difficulty I have with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
For my regular car, if I want to bring in a car that mm-hmm. I'm going to use to get to work,
right.
I have to pay over 100.
It has to be a certain year, too. It has
Pardon
to be
me?
A certain. It has to be of a certain vintage. You can't bring a. It has to be a fairly young car. Let me put it that way. If you're importing a car, it can't be 12 years old. It got to be less
yeah,
than
but
that.
Yeah, that's like, but this is my point. You don't get the poor black people trying to bring in these cars. And the point is that the people who could afford to pay the taxes
should be able to pay. Yeah,
exactly. I don't see why for that particular type of car that attracts only a certain type of people. that they get zero duties on, right? But it comes back to something that I see within government. And I'm not politically affiliated with anybody, but I see that governments, whether it is the opposition or the ruling government, that they always appease a certain type of people, right? No, this comes to my other point, which was something that happened in the... Well, you want to respond to that? Cause I know you were saying that you saw some person...
No. The only reason I... No, listen. The only reason I made the comment, right, is because... I think too often we associate well-to-do with white. And they got some people who are not white who are very well-to-do. And they may also be a part of the the importing of antiques clique. Yeah. Let me put it that way. I'm trying to put it, you know, because we
very nice. Yeah.
No, it's not that I'm trying to put it very nice. No, here's the thing. I still believe, it's just my belief, again, my belief, just as you have yours. Here's my belief. My belief is that because of the conspicuous nature of Caucasians in Barbados, they're not the majority, so they're easily seen. When they gathered together for any event, it's labeled a white person event. So whether it's polo, motor racing, vintage cars, horse racing...
That, you know, everything you call there just now, you know, the average person can't get into. You realize that?
Let me ask you a silly question, right? Okay. Why do you think I mentioned it? All right, go ahead. Right. But you see, unfortunately or fortunately, I walk around and I look around and I see things. Yachting is an example. I can use that one, but I could use that one too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they gather for those events, the perception is this is what they do. If you go to a football match, how many white football teams we got in Barbados? So you won't call it a white event, right? Go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
So, all right, the long and short of it, I would like for the government to look back at that exemption. If someone from the government could, you know, look at that and, you know, because I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair that the rest of Barbados have to pay so high duty for cars that are necessary. And the ones who just have the cars sitting down there to show off when they have an event, they don't have to pay any duty on it. That is totally unfair. Yeah? So, hello?
I'm listening to you carefully.
Right. So that's my first point. I just want someone for the government to look at that, to address it.
Correct.
If they're all for it, then come on and
then
say,
come out and say,
removing the duty, it is something that we support. I'm all for it. Just have a clear position on it. That's one. My second point, and the one that I really called about, was an extra that you carried on the news this morning with regard to the Minister of Culture and his view on the removal of
Nelson,
Admiral Nelson. I don't want to be dramatic here, right? But then I heard him equate the removal of Nelson. He said, well, the parliament was from back in the time of slavery. You want me to knock that down and the war. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is he for real? The slaves built the parliament. The parliament was not something that was, like, had an opinion in terms of slavery or anything like that. Admiral Nelson is documented to be in support of slavery. And I think, especially in a place where you have so many people that were the descendants of slaves, which I would hope that the same minister sees as something as being very wrong. I don't see how it is that he can make that sort of comparison. I mean, I'm wondering if he sees slavery as something that was wrong in the first place. Because why would you have a statue of some person who was in support of slavery? I mean, given, yes, he was a great strategist in the Battle of Trafalgar and all of that. But that doesn't matter. If it is at the end of the day that you're a racist person, I don't care how good you are. You know, that stands out more to me, especially since it is that it affected my people. So I would like for the minister to, I don't know, I would like to give him an opportunity to explain his position. Because, you see, here's something where I think it should be, I don't even think that a discussion needs to be, you know, you settle to have a whole set of debate and that sort of thing on it is something that, to me is very obvious. I don't see how it is that he could be defending this. I could understand if it was some person that is white defending, keeping the statue there, you know, but come on, man. I mean, I remember listening to Johnny McBoy for years, you know, and now for him to come and have this sort of position now, I mean, it's really disappointing. Anyhow, that was my other beef that was on my mind.
Fair enough, sir. Good to hear you on it. The comment I would make is this. I think the minister is quite, he's going to be challenged on this. Let me put it this way. The minister is going to be challenged on this. He's going to be challenged on this on several fronts. As you said, as a Calypsonian, the lyrics of his music over the years, I'm back to tell, you know, Britain this. He has been pretty strong on the black consciousness movement. So I think the minister will be challenged on his stance on Nelson. It's going to be interesting to hear how he continues to make his way around that one. The other thing that I was going to put on the end of what you said was that I'll read this one to you, this because it falls on the end of it. He said, this WhatsApp says, I endorse the philosophy of Black Lives Matter and our local show of support for the issues. I don't want this to be a distraction, but I'm quietly concerned about the leadership style of David Denny. I don't want to see him continually throwing tantrums in public and shouting police brutality. I want to see firm and coherent leadership, strong on the issues, but sensible in the execution thereof. If we do not, our movement and revolution will not be taken seriously. What you will find is that key individuals will be looked to for a strong stance or leadership on certain matters. And when they do not follow the manner in which you would like to see it go, it threatens the survival of the movement. So that's why I said it's going to be interesting to see how the minister responds, given the comments you made about how you viewed his music and the lyrics of his calypsos over the years. You know, it's going to be interesting. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Morning, sir.
No, just when you answer my phone beeping off anywhere, I'll discard that. You know, sometimes on the phone, holding on for so long, you hear other callers and you are tempted to want to respond to some of the things that they would have said. But nevertheless, you should keep focus. I call this morning, sir, to talk very shortly about two things, Black Lives Matter and something that I heard last night on the news. I think he is the deputy president of the Senate, Mr. Rudolph Greenidge.
Cappy Greenidge, yeah?
Yes, sir. But first, let me say this. Let me send up praise to my God Almighty for those showers that I heard this morning raining down on my roof. I know the farmers out there they're grateful for them. I'll move on to Mr. Greenidge now.
Mm-hmm.
From what I was hearing last night, he seemed to be saying that he don't understand why agents seem to be afraid of investing. Did you hear the clip?
No, I didn't, sir.
Okay. Well, I got that impression. If I'm wrong, I hope someone out there will call and correct me. But Mr. Greenidge seems to have short memory. Or he left Barbados sometime after 2008, and he didn't come back until yesterday. Now, I worked for a company for a number of years, and this goes back into the 90s, this company started educating its workers about the importance of your retirement. Don't wait until retirement date to think about retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a younger person then, thought, you know what? Let me look for something. And there were treasury notes out there, debentures, and those kind of things. And I started to invest in those things.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, and that was to help to supplement my pension.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, a Sunday afternoon in September, I think it could have been between September 15th and 17th, I had a call inviting me to a meeting at the Hilton, the Monday. And my investment were drastically cut. I moved from 6-point-something% interest down to about 2% or something like that. So I don't know if Mr. Greenidge now come back to Barbados from wherever he was hiding. Yeah, Barbadians are not afraid. And hear this, I don't have, I am not in any way, I don't care if anybody invests in the boss or not. All I'm saying is you should not make those kind of statements because Bajans were out there investing, thousands of Bajans. When I went into the central bank, the number of people I saw in the central bank already had to go and get the haircut. I had no idea it was a barbershop, right? So I would appreciate if people like Mr. Greenidge wouldn't use opportunities like yesterday to make it look like Bajans in the investing type. Bajans just want the assurance that when they invest the money, that they're going to get the returns. Well, I, because I'm getting what I signed up for number of years ago, and this is before the turn of the century, in some cases. Do you care to make
sir.
A comment?
No,
or?
Sir.
Okay, good.
Mm.
Oh. Black Lives Matter.
Uh-huh.
The Prime Minister made a statement last week or the week before about jumping on the bandwagon. And I understand or I understood then what she was talking about. Because when I heard about the marches, the very first one that was about the 6th of June or whatever, and I heard the name David Denny call, I said, no way, no way. You know, I am not trying to stir up anything in this country, but a man was taken away from his family about between 3 and 5 years ago. I got to keep using numbers like that, right? Because I'm not as young as I used to be. So the memory is good. But this man was taken away. He was the sole breadwinner in his family. He was taken away. And I didn't hear anything about black lives. And he was a black man. Black lives matter at all times. So don't jump on bandwagons because it is happening worldwide. Yes, we have our brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, nieces in the United States where these injustices are being taken daily on black people. But don't just jump. Black lives matter every day. Every day. And you don't have to wait, I will say it again, until it happens in Europe or North America till you suddenly want to come and do it here. Let us respond or
I made was that I think in Barbados, by and large, we do not see street protests as being a first response to most things that happen here. I think the Black Lives Matter movement was an umbrella that gave us the confidence, perhaps, to raise some of the issues that we see as being issues to be raised. But if we raised it on our own, we would be seen as racist, biting the hand that feed we can be victimized, etc., 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 etc. All the things that we say regularly on this program when people call and say, don't mention my name, but don't call my name, but I want you to raise this because if I go on the radio, people will know my voice, but. So the Black Lives Matter was an umbrella. Well, sir, let's say self-preservation in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again,
let me just one more thing before you go.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Here's the other thing. No. You also would hear the comment, Mr. Murray made the comment, I think, a couple of days ago. He was speaking to me at the time, and then I've heard him make it before with another moderator, I think I was producing at the time, when he said there was, at one point in Barbados, some people you would see at the forefront of protests for change. You know, people from the university and other people. They're names that I'm sure people would call. But they're fading in the background and they're no longer around. And I had asked, you know, what's the difference then and now? I think there are people who genuinely believe in issues and raise their voices about it. From time to time, they go silent and the people question why. There are others that come to the fore all the time and the reaction is, he again? Is there anything that pleases him? So sometimes the people who would like to lead the charge say, you know what, let somebody else lead it this time. Perhaps. I don't know the reasons why they do what they don't do. Yeah.
You know, I see these people, I've been following them for eons, right? And these people always, and Mr. Denny is one, man. I can call his name if I don't want to cut it. Who always wait for an occasion like this to make people see he's a freedom fighter. He's no freedom fighter. He's just, let Mr. Wesley know, right? You get the people something. I live near, very close to the said
Junction?
Westmoreland Junction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Something has to be done. Something has to be done. There was a time when there was a roundabout at the junction of Culloden Road and the Pine Road.
Correct.
They then put lights.
Right.
If the people see or the relevant authorities see it right now, and by the way, they have the strips monitoring the traffic.
Yeah, that's what I told them. I went across there to check, and I saw the strips down monitoring the flow. Yeah.
If the people see that they have done something and it isn't working, okay, yeah, we waste money all the time, but I'm going to give them this here that they are trying to at least do something. There are too many lives have been lost there. I've been living in this area now for nearly 20 years, and I can tell you, yes. So I tell Wesley to cool off. Wesley, I remember the days when the highway was turning to the Bell section from Huttersville turning to Norman Niles.
Mm-hmm.
When the feeder piece to go up by where Jose, he used to be on the radio every day talking a lot of nonsense about to put this triangle in the middle of the road, in the middle of the two lanes. And I could not understand, this man crazy, this man can't understand what's going on. So I don't really, again, Wesley's one that can hush when it comes to matters like these. He ain't an expert, but they don't look for old cars and fix. Have a good day, Mr. Johnson.
All right, sir.